Good afternoon. Everybody's probably getting a little tired and a little sleepy, so hopefully we can keep this a little bit interesting. Welcome to this session. I want to consider, just for a little while, ways of investing or engaging our neighbors, ways of investing in our neighbors. I believe that followers of Jesus will love their neighbors as themselves. That's what this scripture says right here. That if we love God and we want to follow Jesus, that we're also going to love our neighbors. And I trust that's the heart of each of us yesterday. First, I want to share just a little testimony from after my talk yesterday on using your home as a mission. And I talked about radical hospitality. And when we came here, we came in a motor home and we were going to stay out in the parking lot. And we decided that wasn't going to work last night, that our tanks were full and we needed water and we just needed to get refreshed somewhere. So I booked a reservation at a campground. But right after my talk, I met a brother down here in this lower level and he said, "Where are you staying?" And so I told him the story and he said, "Come back to our house." And we went back there and they opened their home wide open and they shared with us. And it just blessed me tremendously to know that it was spur of the moment, and his wife sent breakfast with us this morning, and I trust that's our heart as we think about engaging the people around us, and that's our desire to reach out, whoever it is, doesn't matter, that we can be a blessing in our communities. This is just the subtitle. After deciding to use our home as a mission, we may need ideas or ways to interact with our neighbors and those that are in our communities. In this session, we will look at some ideas and share experiences that our family has had in interacting with neighbors. Engaging your neighbors may not be as difficult as you think. I want to just go through this here. The goal is to just stimulate thought. These are just ideas, nuts and bolts, things that we've tried, and trust that it'll just stir something up in your minds. And I would like you to give ideas at the end, if possible, and write them down if you have ideas or questions. We'd like to have some discussion on it. First of all, who is my neighbor? I'm not clicking through the, sorry, I'm not doing well with this. Who is my neighbor? First of all, we need to be clear in our minds who our neighbor is. And who do you think your neighbor is? That's a question that I have. And there's also someone else that asked this question one time. Back in Luke 10, a lawyer asked Jesus this question. This is right after the lawyer asked Jesus what he should do to inherit eternal life. Jesus challenged him and said, "What is written in the law?" And on that slide, it was the very first slide, said the lawyer replied with a verse in that first slide and said this: "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus answered this. He said, "This do and you shall live." And notice that it includes loving your neighbor. But this lawyer, wanting to justify himself, asked this question, said, "Who is my neighbor?" I think he wanted to trick Jesus there. And we're familiar with his account, but it's just good to go over it. And I trust that's not our desire today, that we aren't trying to avoid who the neighbor is, but we have a desire to learn to know the neighbor. Then Jesus goes on and tells this story of the man that went down to Jericho, and we're all familiar with that. Fell among thieves, and the priest and Levite came by, and eventually the Samaritan stopped and helped him, took good care of him. But Jesus asks this question: "Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" And I like the way Jesus always, or not always, but many times he answers a question with a question. He wants us to think. And think about this as you engage with people, asking questions to just allow them to think a little bit. But I like what the lawyer answer and what Jesus told him to do. He said, the lawyer said this, it's the one who showed him mercy. And it's a pretty simple answer, but that's who our neighbors are. It's the ones that we're willing to show mercy to. And it's the ones we're willing to take time for and the ones we're willing to invite into our home or whatever it may be. But I trust that we are willing to show mercy. And Jesus said this. He said, go and do likewise. And that's a command of Jesus that I want to hold before us as we think about just practical ways of engaging. So how do we show mercy to our neighbors? I think that's a big question that each of us have today as we think about, I think we want to be active in our communities, but we live in a time that it's challenging. What does it look like to engage our neighbors? Especially when we live in a place where just about every physical need is met. There's free handouts. There's stimulus checks going out. Food and money and housing. But I want to just think about a little bit about the fact that most of these people are still lonely and living in despair. Even though their physical needs are being met, there's many that are in despair, and I would say that the last session that we heard about would show where many people are at, and they're living in helpless and lonely situations. So how do we show mercy? I want to go through a few things that we've tried to do, and I don't have the answers, but I trust that we can just stir your minds just a little bit. Number one is just live intentionally. I want to go over that. Number two is community events. Number three, make your neighbors feel needed. Number four is service opportunities. And five, using your resources to bless the community. We'll try to go through these together. Living intentionally. What do my neighbors see in our lives? What do our neighbors see in our lives? Are we making intentional choices for them to see my desire for God, or do they see me following whatever the world has to offer? We'll go quickly through these points on living intentionally, but I think that each of us need to really examine our hearts as we think about living intentionally. And I have a picture up here. I don't know where you're at as a person. I didn't put this up here because I'm good at living intentionally. But I want you to consider yourself on the screen. Do your neighbors see you as a man or a woman of God? One that they could confide in when the struggles and challenges and trials are coming. When they see you, do they see someone that they could come to for help in a time of crisis or in a time of need? Are they just do they just see another busy Christian that is just going about their life and do not have time for them? Think about yourself and what your neighbors may see in you. Next, your marriage. You know, we have a tremendous opportunity to show our neighbors a testimony of a Christian marriage and a testimony of Christ in the church. And so what do my neighbors see in my marriage? Is it something they would desire or that they can see something beautiful there? Your children. When our neighbors look at our homes, what do they see? What are my children's interests? What are my children engaged in? Are they a testimony of Christ as we work together and as we labor together? Or when we go to town, how do they act and how do they respond to us? Do our neighbors see our youth as people that will someday bless the community? What about your possessions? Are the things I possess leading my neighbors toward a closer walk with God? Are the things I possess leading me towards a closer walk with God? Or do I just continue to go after the next thing that the world has to offer? I know we have to have houses and we have to have cars. They're a necessary thing, I believe, but somehow we need to understand that We don't have to live up to a certain class, or we don't have to have all the latest and greatest. And I think our neighbors will see that if we are making consideration as we make purchases for things that we need. Your businesses, are they a testimony of going the extra mile? Or am I seen as someone that's just tightly holding on to my money and driving hard bargains or deals? If I'm employed by someone, am I putting in my expected day, or am I trying to just get by with what I can? These are things that leave huge impressions on a community. And it can be very good, and it can be very bad. I used to work in a community that saw Anabaptist people as hard bargainers and people that were hard to deal with. And I just hope that's not our testimony as we go forward. But the people we engage and do business with will see us as loving, caring, generous people. What about your passions? What do I get excited about? Is it the next hunting trip or the next fishing trip or whatever it may be that excites you? Or is it the next table full of guests that might come? Or the next Bible study or the next church event or the next volunteer service trip that's coming up? What excites me more? And I think our neighbors will see what our passions are. And so those few points, I just want to think about living intentional lives that would bring others and that would attract others into the kingdom of God, and that his kingdom would expand and grow. Next is community events. I want to just talk about a few things that ways just to try to intermingle with the community. And many of you have probably tried this, but tried different things, but there's just a couple that we have done that I just want to share. This here is a picture of an event that we've done in our congregation at home. It's become an annual tradition. Every fall, we have an apple cider day, apple cider pressing and a potluck meal. And usually the way we do this is our youth will go out and a couple weeks ahead of time and pick 8 or 10 bins of apples and get ready for this event. And we've purchased a few cider presses and we get set up there. And all the people in our church congregation invite anybody they know. And we just have a good day together, just working together, making apple cider. And it's a blessing to watch it. I mean, you see every walk of life, every kind of person intermingling there, working together. And there was one year we had international students from local colleges come, and we had, I think, 15 or 20 different countries represented there in the basement of one of our brother's barns. And one thing we do is we ask everyone to bring food. It just feels good to neighbors so that they can, and people that they can contribute. And then everyone has a meal together, and we have hot drinks and fresh apple cider and coffee and tea, and everybody gets to take a jug of cider along home. And then we sing a few hymns together and have a prayer together. And it's just a way, it's not a high pressure. There's not a lot of spiritual teaching there, but it's a blessing to just mingle with the community and build relationship. That's one of the community events that we do. Another that I didn't have any pictures of is a Christmas program that we do annually. Our youth prepare for this, and we do the same thing. We set a date, we pass out invitations, all of us pass out invitations to our neighbors, and the youth sing, and then there's a devotion, and then there's a meal together. And it's something that our neighbors have looked forward to now. We've done it for just about 10 years, I think. And we'll meet up with people in town that we don't even know, that we haven't had personal interaction with, and they say, when is that next Christmas program? We just want to know when it's coming. And, you know, be sure to get us on the list. And so just a community events that involve the neighbors are a tremendous way to learn to know them and to interact with them. I've heard some great discussions, great opportunities to witness the love of Christ at these events. Next thing I want to consider is making your neighbors feel needed. And this is something we struggle with tremendously as productive Anabaptist people. We like to provide everything and take care of everything, and we really don't need much help from anybody else. That's just the way we're built. But I think it puts a barrier between us and them. So make them feel needed. Borrow from them. These few pictures I have up here are just some things that I've borrowed from my neighbors in the past, some things I just thought of quickly. But we just struggle with this. But if we're going to allow our neighbors to feel, or if we want our neighbors to feel like equals to us and equal human beings, we need them also. We can't be their savior and their provider. We can't always be the giver. We need to be willing to be the receiver. And I know that we struggle to borrow just because of the law of borrowing. Every time you borrow something, it breaks. But what an opportunity if you borrow it to return something back in much better shape than it came. But just remember that we don't need to provide everything. We need to need them if we want to interact with them. Another is ask advice on how to do things. This can be challenging sometimes, maybe if you haven't moved into a new area. But I'm guessing some of your neighbors have had some experiences that you haven't had. And they know some things that you don't know. And what an opportunity to ask them about it. When I moved to Idaho, we moved to Idaho 10 years ago, I knew nothing about irrigation. And these are some pictures of irrigating. And I didn't know how to order water, and I still don't know how to set siphon tubes. Many things I don't know about irrigation. But one thing I got to do is I got to ask my neighbors how to irrigate. And I didn't have a church community. It was a new group there, and I didn't have a church community to ask. We had the opportunity to ask our neighbors how to irrigate. And too often we tend to go to our own people for advice on things that we could actually learn from our communities. So I just challenge us to ask our neighbors how to do things. I'm guessing you have a neighbor that knows something that you don't. Another, I mentioned this at our apple cider event, but just have them bring food when invited for meals. This is another mistake we make many times is we like to put on a big spread and just provide. But there's something in people when they bring something along to an event that makes them feel included and makes them feel like they are contributing. When they contribute and it's a joint effort, people relax. I think that's the way it always is. But when they feel like a little bit of an underdog or a little bit like we're a little superior to them, I don't think they'll relax quite as much. Invite them to help on work days. This is a picture of, I built a little shop there at my place, and neighbors, we got our neighbors to come help on the project. And it's just a blessing to be able to allow them to feel like they're contributing in community events. Next is just service opportunities. And I think that we do well as Anabaptists to do this, but I just want to encourage us to continue on with it, to work on service opportunities when available. This is a couple pictures of us doing some cleanup in our local communities. And some of the jobs we've gotten have been pretty miserable. We've done leaf raking and flower bed cleaning, and one time our youth cleaned up a building that was, I don't even know how many rabbits were in there, but someone had walked away from a building that was full of rabbit hutches and live rabbits, and they walked away and quit feeding them. And I think they went in there and cleaned out hundreds of rabbit carcasses. And our youth ended up enjoying it. It was actually a fun day after they got past the initial thought of it. And some of these events, we've had opportunity to stay and sing with these people or just spend some time in their home with them when we get done with a project. Also, a picture of a load. We cleaned out someone's house a while back of someone that just accumulated years and years of junk. and what an opportunity to help out in these situations. Home repair projects, something that we've done, put some shingles on a house on the one picture here. The other thing we did is we painted the local post office. We got our youth together and went down there, and it doesn't have to be a disaster. It doesn't have to be a crisis to get involved in just helping something, helping people out in the community. And even just a post office, it wasn't, I'm sure the U.S. government could have paid to have that painted, but what an opportunity for us to serve. Home ec opportunities. This is a few pictures. A couple of our sisters went into our local community. There's a lot of Hispanics there, and they put on a class on how to can. These folks didn't know anything about canning, and they canned beans, pinto beans, I think. They spent a day teaching the ladies how to can beans. It's a great opportunity just to interact with locals in our community. Helping in time of crisis. And we do well at this, but I think we could probably do better. One of the things that we've done is we've made caskets for low-income people in our community. We've had a few occasions where someone has passed away and the family didn't have enough money to pay for a funeral. And we've spent, I remember one time, one of the brothers worked till about 3 o'clock in the morning, and another brother and I came at 3 in the morning and continued on the work and finished this casket up just in time for a funeral. And we've, in this time of crisis, people are tender and soft, and it's a great opportunity to reach out and help them. We've sang at funerals. We even had a funeral for a family one time that had no one else to help out, and one of the brothers preached the funeral graveside service. But let's let these opportunities be a testimony of the love and the compassion that Jesus has offered to us and continues to offer to everyone. I want to think just a little bit about the resources to bless, using our resources to bless the community. These are just some things that our family has done, just our family. And we have a lot to learn. We've made a lot of mistakes, but it's something that has been enjoyable. One thing that I did is I built a mechanic shop at my house. I'm a mechanic by trade, and we allow people to come and use the shop and work on vehicles. Sometimes I help them with projects. Sometimes they do it themselves. But it's a great opportunity to provide something for them. And the other thing is they end up sometimes coming in for a meal or sometimes coming in and just interacting with us. It's been a tremendous blessing. And I can give an example. I worked with a fellow that needed his transmission rebuilt. And I said, well, I'll be willing to help you. So he came over, and I was concerned about this fella because he was loud, and he had the foulest mouth that you've ever heard. And, you know, the list went on and on of all his faults. And so I warned my family. I said, we're going to have a man come to our table, and you're probably going to hear a language that you've never heard before. And it's going to be quite the experience. And one of my other coworkers actually found out about it, and he decided to come over that evening because he wanted to see what happened. Well, you know what happened? When this fella come into the house that night, it's just like something changed in his demeanor. And he sat there in our home, and he didn't tell any wild stories, and his language was perfect. And we had family devotions, and he opened his Bible and read along with us. And so many times our fears of these people coming in are actually, the Lord can do something tremendous if we're willing to engage in his work. He'll protect us from some of our biggest fears. One thing we've done in the past is just community youth gatherings. We haven't done it for a while. Just we're in a little bit different season of life right now. Maybe it's been a little bit challenging to do. But for a while, every one night a week, I think it was a Tuesday night, we would invite youth from our community in and just play games. And we would do a few things like put a bowl on the table, and there's a little sign in there that says, more social, less media, I think is what it said. Everybody put their phones in there, and we'd just have an enjoyable evening together just playing games. And we didn't even put any pressure on them on engaging them in devotions or anything like that. We just wanted to have an enjoyable time with them. That was a blessing to interact. So one of the fellows still asked me about that. He really enjoyed that. Extra plates at the table. I talked about this in my last talk, but we've hosted many people at our table. Neighbors, travelers, salesmen, hurting youth, refugees, college students. There's just something about sitting down to a meal that's a tremendous blessing and an opportunity, and we always enjoy it. And I wanted to say about that family we were with last night, where we stayed. I think they had 8 children. And they come walking in there, and they acted like it was life as usual, that our family just kind of rolled in there and overtook their home. And I trust that that's how we can be, that it doesn't have to be a big deal to invite people in. We just allow them to come in into our lives and blend in with our families. We've had extras living in our home, and I'll say this creates many challenges, but it can be a tremendous blessing also. We have to learn to give and take a little bit. We had 3 girls living in our home at one time, and it was probably a little bit much, but it was what was needed at the time. And so we need to be willing to do some of these things because it's what's needed, not because it's easy, not because it's not an easy task sometimes, but it was needed at the time. International Student Host Program. This is something that we've enjoyed. There in Boise and in Caldwell, there's colleges that have international students in quite a few of them. And we've signed up with a program to be a host family for these students. So they're here from all different countries, and they need a family just to go to on the holiday, just spend time with. And it's been a tremendous blessing for most of our congregation is involved in this. And then these students end up coming to some of our events like Thanksgiving Day and just different things like that. And they become part of our lives. And many of these students that come from other cultures, specifically the Muslim culture, love our lifestyle because it feels familiar to them. They love the focus on family, and it makes them feel at home. And we've had some very meaningful conversations with some of these men that are struggling, men and young ladies that are struggling through life. So that's just one example of things we've done. And so how do we show mercy to our neighbors? How are you going to show mercy to your neighbors? Like I say, we don't have the answers. I just trust that this was a time that we could share a few things that we've done. But I want to end with this quote. It's also another quote from Rosaria Butterfield. It says this: let God use your home, apartment, dorm room, front yard, community, gymnasium, or garden for the purpose of making strangers into neighbors and neighbors into family, because that is the point. Building the church and living like the family, like a family, the family of God. So I just call us to that. I think that's what Jesus wants us to do. And engaging our neighbors can be, I know in different areas it's probably different, but I think there's many out there that are much more open than what we may think. And so we have some time here. I would like to hear from you all, maybe some thoughts, ideas, discussion. Anyhow, it's open. Yeah, go ahead. She asked how to learn to know the youth in the neighborhood. It seems like that our experience has been if you learn to know one, they usually have friends, and that's kind of how it has grown in the past. And sometimes it's hard to learn to know one, but many of them have, especially in our community, it's a lot of Hispanics there, and they have cousins and family, and so we've been able to engage some of them. But usually, I'll say this, that some of these young people, I know that they've shared that it's a safe place. It's where you can go and share and unload your struggles. And I'm not saying that to say that we've done a good job at that, but there's a lot of people looking for that opportunity, a place to be heard. Any other? How about? Yeah, that is, I think that can be challenging, but I think there should be a way to do it, especially if the church is involved. You know, if your local community is involved, everybody can pitch in and help with that a little bit. That's to me, that would be the ideal. If you can get, you know, a family, you know, if you would invite a mixed crowd to your home, that you could also have a family from the church come to make it a little less awkward. I don't know if that's a good answer or not, but I know there was some young men that lived in our community that used to host a lot of single men also. Okay, I think time is about up. If there's nothing else pressing, I think that's it.